This is Inside the Magic Studio with your host, Robert Martin, the interview podcast with the best in Magic the Gathering. I'd like to thank GatheringMagic.com, where you can find this show along with some of the best articles in Magic and Cool Stuff, Inc. Our guest this episode is Sam Black. You might know him as one of the premier deck designers on the Pro Tour right now. Share a little time with me as you get a fascinating story about a man who has worked hard for everything he's earned in Magic.
People have said that when you are on the week of an event, between your work for SCG, travel, and event time, it says you can spend over 90 hours a week doing this. Is this true?
I can't say for sure that I've specifically broken 90 regularly, but it's not uncommon for me to spend a huge amount of time on Magic-related activities, especially if you factor in travel. I would say that's certainly a realistic estimate, if not an exactly accurate one.
What is an average week for you on a GP week like this?
What are you asking for exactly?
Okay. What do you do Monday through Sunday for a GP? How much magic time do you do?
Honestly, I don't get to test as much for Grand Prix as I would like to, because so much of my week is getting... I mean, like, this week, for example, I would like to have drafted more than I did. I got back from traveling for 3 weeks, and so I was pretty out of it on Monday. And basically, a lot of my time was spent with things like grocery shopping and spending time with my girlfriend. And then I had to write my article for Star City, my article for Wizards, record a video for Star City. And I wanted to catch up on some shows. I was in watching Justified. And spent a lot of time today getting my car fixed. Just, you know, normal errands that people have to do when they're in town, when they're not in town all that much.
So the rumor is not true that you do magic all the time, period.
Well, I mean, this is when I'm first getting back from 4 weeks of traveling for magic all the time.
Okay.
basically, like, my actual work, which is magic, can cut into my testing for events, which is also magic schedule. Like, there's some amount of conflict between needing to prepare an article that has general use and, like, researching decks to record constructed videos with and stuff while needing to prepare for a limited event or stuff like that. Like, basically, there's some amount of research that goes into all of my articles that is largely looking up deck lists online, staying current with what's been happening, and maybe testing a couple games on Magic Online that takes a significant amount of time away from just playing games. So I end up playing a lot less Magic Online than the, you know, younger, dedicated Moto grinders. Like, I rarely have more than 10 QPs in a month.
Interesting. Now, when I interviewed John, he says that he trusts your deck building, and because of this, he still plays competitive Magic on the Pro Tour. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, the first part, that he trusts my deck building, is definitely true. The second part of the second sentence is also true. He does still play competitive Magic on the Pro Tour. I don't know that the causal relationship is as strong as that implies. I think that if I wasn't involved, he would be able to find other people who could build decks that he would trust and succeed with. I think that John is a smart guy, and he knows a lot of other smart guys who are very happy to help him. It's great that I've been able to be the one to help him most directly recently, but I think that I'm the more replaceable part of the equation to his success than he is, certainly.
See, the only thing when he said that you know how John talks. There was an inflection in his voice that really seemed like that statement that he made seemed to be more true than you're giving credit for. And that's the only reason why I'm bringing this up. Even at the last Pro Tour with the Aristocrats, and then he's like, you know, it's his deck and I trust it. And he went out and he was very successful with it.
Yeah, I mean, John has certainly been very nice about giving me a lot of credit. But, I mean, at the end of the day, he's still, you know, John Finkel. like, I'm sure that he could manage to, you know, get it done with a deck that he and Zvi and the rest of our team worked on without me. But, I mean, it really is an honor to be able to actually be the one who has done it. And, I mean, it's certainly a great pleasure to see people, John and others, succeed with the decks that I've put a lot of, you know, time and effort into building.
When Tom won the Pro Tour with your deck, how special is that for you?
That was, I mean, that's definitely something that I've come close to a couple times now with both Go and John. It's always frustrating when it doesn't quite happen, especially since in both of those cases, there were things they could have done to get a little further than they did. And so it's certainly more satisfying when it actually works, especially since just the way that history remembers things, you just get a lot more credit when you actually, you know, win, even when it doesn't say anything about the deck's design, that like John or that Tom won when he didn't screw up and John and Go lost when they did. Like the deck was, you know, in all cases, the deck was good enough to win the match that it lost. But on the other hand, like mistakes are always going to be made, and what sets an extremely good deck apart is being able to win despite, you know, win with a little bit of margin for error. That said, I don't know that the deck that Tom had could do that. I'm not sure that Tom actually made any mistakes. I think Tom was playing great that weekend. And, you know, John has said that Aristocrats was the worst of the decks of mine that he's played in Pro Tours. And, I certainly can't strongly disagree with that. So it's certainly very much to Tom's credit that he was able to seal the deal where others hadn't. But I mean, I do think that, the work that the rest of us did in helping him prepare for that top eight and testing his matches and stuff was also, well done and useful to him.
How long was that evening after Tom made the top eight that you guys spent testing with him?
We were all pretty tired, and Tom was pretty down on his chances in the matchup. They tested for a while I foolishly took a reasonably long walk to get some food that we could have had delivered. And then I came back and they were playing some games, and I was like, let me see how you're sideboarding. And I didn't like what he was doing, but I know that the way to get someone to test something isn't just to tell them about it. You have to actually hand them the deck that you want tested, because no one else wants to put in the work to building someone else's deck. So I just got another copy of the deck, sideboarded it the way that I wanted it sideboard, handed it to Tom and said, play this. And then Tom played a few matches with, or a few games with the deck sideboarded the way that I thought it should be sideboarded. And, he was very happy with the results there. And we all thought that my plan made sense. And so we didn't keep testing a lot after basically just figuring out, yeah, this is definitely what we want to do. We had brainstormed a couple other approaches. Like we'd brainstormed, you know, feeling like the match was so desperate that we had to like set up some ridiculous like long shot combo to win and just bring in like Boris Reckoner and Blasphemous Act and hoping to just like play multiple Boris Reckoners and Blasphemous Act to win, which is just like not even close to what the matchup should be about, but like desperate times kind of thing. But it was clear the way that we ended up sideboarding was just to maximize the humans, to try to get as aggressive a start as possible, and cutting all the removal. And just saying like, okay, I have to be the beatdown deck here. I'm losing late games, so I'll do everything I can to be the beatdown deck. And that's a slightly difficult jump to make because the opposing deck has like big creatures that can relevantly get in the way of the creatures that you have. So cutting the removal is not an obvious thing to do there. But the fact of the matter is that like our creatures are good enough at pushing through. Like, the cheap ones get in early damage, and then the expensive ones can push through, that you don't actually need removal, and, like, spending a removal spell on a Thrag Tusk is just not a winning game plan. Like, that creature is made to fight that kind of thing. Now, I'm saying that we settled on this plan of cutting all the removal, which means the Orzhov Charms, when people who remember the match would know that Tom actually won by using Orzhov Charm. And what happened there was that Tom is able to adjust on the fly and saw that Melissa had sideboarded in a way that we didn't expect. Specifically, she brought in Rest in Peace, which we didn't think really did anything in the match. And that pushed Tom over the edge into deciding that Skurzdike High Priest just wasn't worth it with Rest in Peace there to turn off the Morbid. And so he cut some of them to make room for a couple of Orzhov Charms. But that was a relatively minor tweak in the plan of just trying to be as aggressive as possible that was made on the fly based on gathering new information, which is, of course, very important to be able to do.
With the change in Magic design to more an aggressive creature-based system, does this bother how you like to design decks?
Given that the deck I just designed was an aggressive creature deck, and the deck in, I mean, really, like, both spirit decks were also aggressive creature decks. Honestly, the decks that I like most are synergistic creature decks, which generally means that there's some kind of tribal thing going on. And those are generally pretty good against other aggressive creature strategies, especially if those aggressive creature strategies have more creatures and less removal rather than the other way around. And so as Wizards prints more creatures that are better than removal, such that removal is not really worth playing, it actually kind of plays into the way that the kind of decks that I naturally like to play. So as far as just like building in a way that lets me do my thing, just like on level one, no, I don't think that it's particularly at odds with it. I'm not someone who's just like trying to play a control deck no matter what and doesn't want a creature in play or anything. But also, I mean, the point of Magic is that, you know, changing puzzle elements and everything, and you know, they can print whatever cards they want, and I'll be pretty happy to try to design a deck with them.
Now, a person who assists you with SCG Black Z, considered the best deck builder of his era, what's it like to work with him?
Awesome. Extremely educational. I've certainly learned a lot from him. He built... I was working with him... So I first started working with him as a result of Godinus moving to New York, and then Go started working with Zvi because they were both there and some of the only pros that were living there and preparing. So they got together, and this was right after Go had moved away from Madison when we were living together. And so it was just natural for Go to be talking to both of us, and then he basically put Zvi and I in touch, and that was for Pro Tour San Diego when Zvi built Mythic. And I think that I learned a reasonable amount just from seeing that deck and playing it. And then I worked with him again for Pro Tour San Juan, where he built the mono green deck in Rise of Eldrazi block constructed. And there I was actually working with him from the beginning and got to see not only that deck that he built, but the other decks that he was working on in the format and just how he approached block constructed. And I think that I'm someone who can learn a lot from watching another player's process. Like one of my like learning breakthroughs in the game was when I the first Grand Prix that I finished in the money at was Grand Prix St. Louis. It's a bit of a tangent, which was a sealed deck Grand Prix where I happened to sit near Kenji Samura. And after I built my deck, I was like, actually, a friend of mine texted me and was like, "That's Kenji. You should ask him for help." I'm like, "Okay, sure." So I built my deck and I was like, "Hey, what do you think?" And his English wasn't very good. He couldn't really explain to me his reasoning, but I watched him like lay out my pool and like move cards around and think about what he was doing, and then build it and compare like the build that he came up with to the build that I came up with. And just like watching him go through the process with the same cards after I had gone through the process just made a ton of stuff about sealed really click for me, and just like taught me a shocking amount that I like hadn't understood properly about the format. And I think that something similar happened with building decks with Zvi.
Now, when it comes to Pro Tours, how much would it mean to you to win one?
I mean, a lot in the... This is a weird question for me. Because in a way, the answer is a lot. In a way, the answer is almost nothing. And I think that it was probably kind of similar for Tom, where, like, we're both going to do exactly the same thing, whether we win or not. And it's not like the money is going to radically change our life. And, like, you know, obviously more, like, it gets your name out there a little bit more, but at a certain point, it's, you know, not a particularly appreciable, like, percentage increase in your exposure or anything. And so, like, it'd be great to have done it. It would be an important it would be an important step toward getting in the Hall of Fame, which is my ultimate goal. And I think that's the reason it would be most significant for me. I'm not really someone who, like, it's not all about some specific, like, target or getting the trophy or anything. Even the Hall of Fame is less about the title of the achievement and more about the practical application of, like, being able to step away from the game for a while if I want and come back at any time, rather than feeling like locked into doing the same thing or I can't come back. Honestly, it's mostly would be nice, but like I'd rather top 8 two Pro Tours than win one of them. Just because I think that it would be a bigger step toward the actual ultimate goal of getting into the Hall of Fame. So less than it would mean for a lot of people, but still a lot, just because it would mean finally really succeeding at the thing that I've been doing. But at the same time, I just feel like I have been succeeding. I mean, there are a lot of different kinds of success, and I'm happy with everything I've done. I felt pretty successful at the last Pro Tour, even though I earned the minimum prize. You know, I'm content with Magic. I don't need to, like, hit some next level.
You just talked about your Magic schedule. And it has to be a grind on you both mentally and or physically. What do you do to handle this?
I play Magic. Honestly, there's nothing more like invigorating for me than playing Magic. It's a suitable substitute for food and sleep and whatever else one might need. I'm very much an extrovert in the sense that I find being around people to be more energizing than draining, and being alone can get very draining. So if I'm getting worn out from traveling and stuff, the best thing I can do is just like go to the venue and hang out with people. Which is definitely, you know, a good position to be in if you're trying to play Magic all the time. Tournaments aren't stressful or draining or anything. I've been doing this, you know, as long as I can remember, basically. Like, I started playing in Magic tournaments when I was 12, and I've been playing in them basically as much as possible ever since.
It also seems like every Pro Tour, Wizards of the Coast, features you with a deck tech. How much fun is that to do?
So, interestingly, they've moved away from that a little bit because we've had to refuse to do them a couple of times because when they record the deck techs, they like to post them right away while the event is still going on. And even if I'm not doing well in the event, there are several other people playing the deck who want the details of the deck to not be out there. The last Pro Tour, for example, even though Aristocrats won, there was never actually a video deck tech on the deck. Even though it was clearly one of the more new and exciting decks at the event. I don't think they even ever asked us because they just assumed that we wouldn't want to do it because we hadn't wanted to the last time or two. Which is really disappointing. I have done them in the past and I've really liked doing them. But at the same time, we really do care about winning the event and not want that information out there while the tournament's still going on. So I would like it if Wizards could, you know, find a way to work around this issue and maybe do some deck techs with us and post them later on. But that's the situation at the moment.
Yeah, I don't understand why they couldn't do the deck tech with you and say, look, we're going to save it for delays in the top eight coverage. There's delays. So, Tom, your deck made it. We're going to cut to a deck tech with Sam Black on the deck. Now that fills a 15-20 minute void in time. By then, it's already fully well known that the deck exists.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be a perfect place, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, maybe we'll manage to work something out like that sometime soon. But the state at the moment is for the last PT, we didn't do one. But I would certainly be happy to do them more. I do enjoy talking about the decks whenever I can, clearly. And I'll go on as long as they want to let me about it.
You played one of the five best matches, in my opinion, on camera when you played against Josh at Pro Tour Philadelphia.
Thank you.
What was that match like from your point of view? Because we only saw it from the camera.
I knew that it was a bad matchup, but also that it was a much better matchup than people believed it to be. I knew that I was an underdog, but the line was set wrong. Game one was an interesting game for me in terms of Josh played it really badly. There's just no two ways about it. He clearly demonstrated that he hadn't tested the matchup and had no idea what was going on. And that gave me a lot of confidence because, like I said, I thought my chances were a lot better than common perception was. And if he thought that he could just like not worry about the matchup and win because his deck was so much better or whatever, it was going to be like very realistic for me to win this match, even though it was hard. So I won game one, and then I won the next game also.
Yes, you went to 2-0.
Yeah. And at that point, I was feeling really good about things. But while I was optimistic, I was certainly less confident than I have been at other times, because I still knew that he had a lot of cards that made things really difficult for me. And then in game five specifically, for most of it, I just thought I was, for most of that last turn, I thought I was going to win. the math was strongly in my favor.
How was it for you when you kept hearing the crowd roar after every time you kept drawing more cards?
I mean, it was awesome to, know that there were so many people rooting for me. And especially, my girlfriend almost never travels with me. I brought her to the first pro tour that I was qualified for in Honolulu, and that was the only pro tour that I've brought her to. But she has family in Philadelphia, so she happened to be there for that one. And I hadn't brought her to the tournament or anything, but then when I actually made the top eight, I, told her to come by. And so that was, the only Magic tournament that she's ever been in the room for. Her mom was also there. I was definitely very aware of, being watched and playing the game for other people. And I also really wanted, a lot of what was, driving me in that match was wanting to show people how this deck worked and show people that it can beat Zoo and, just here's what's going on with this. This is why this is special. This isn't what you think it is. This deck is for real. And I was really happy to, do as well as I did with it in that match, even though losing in the way that I did in game five felt so much better than just getting rolled would have, because I made a good show of it and demonstrated the strength of the deck. And that was really what was important to me.
Did you get a chance to watch the replay?
Yes.
And did you hear them in the booth? What every card, it's like being at home watching it, the Twitter universe was like every time you were flipping cards, it was like after that match is over, I think there was an emotional devoid or drain.
Yeah, a lot of people have come up to me at various times and told me they're screaming at their computer watching that match or whatever. And, that's really... flattering to hear and stuff. It's really nice to know that all those people were watching and cared. And, it's good to know that people care about what I'm doing. It matters to them that I'm trying to build new decks and, doing interesting things in Magic. And that, certainly helps justify putting the time into doing something new rather than just playing the stock decks, even when there's a similar, expected value type equation going on. Just knowing that what I'm doing is also good for the game is a real reason to try to do it.
It is hard to recreate that kind of Magic. The last time I remember that, I believe, was Chapin Nassif. When the card was, I can only draw one card, boom, and there it was. And when you're sitting there as someone who's watched a lot of Magic like I have, and as soon as that was happening, that's the first thing that popped in my head. It's going to happen again. I mean, we're reliving history here, and it's amazing when you just get those moments, because people will talk about this match 10, 15, 20 years from now. You know, people that will be in the booth covering coverage will say, yes, and do you remember when this happened? And I think that's something very special that, that you got to be a part of.
Yeah.
20 years from now, when people reflect on your career, including hopefully the Hall of Fame, what do you want people to remember you for?
I mean, anything good would be a fine start. most likely, the main things would be my writing and my deck building. And I hope that I'm able to teach people a lot with both of those things. I think that, you know, it's great when people come up to me and say, like, hey, I really love your whatever deck. But I think it means more to me if someone says, like, that they feel like they've learned a lot from me, like from my articles or my stream or whatever they've learned from. I used to want to be a teacher. I don't like the educational system very much, so I'm kind of over it. I think Magic is a better learning tool than most of school anyway. So I think that I guess I would like for most of the people who got into Magic reading my articles and seeing my decks and stuff to just remember me as someone who is instrumental to their building an understanding of the game.
One of the great things about interviewing someone like Sam Black is the fact that he has such a desire to be better at Magic. A lot of people do things in life and will plateau at a point where they feel like they've achieved everything they could in life. And yet Sam strives harder to be better. From his innovative deck designs to working with some of the best players in Magic to everything that he does for the game, from his articles to his videos, this is someone who one day will be in the Hall of Fame. Again, I'd like to thank Sam Black for being on the show, along with you listening at home. Thank you for my sponsors, GatheringMagic.com, where you can find this show, and Cool Stuff, Inc. And until next episode, thank you for listening.